Hello, Internet, and welcome to another episode of Old Geek, Young Geek. I am Scott Pell, the Young Geek. With me, as always, is Steven Johnson, the Old Geek.
Yes.
And with us, we have our guest, Chad Terpstra.
Hello. How's it going?
Chad's a good friend of mine. He's a cinematographer and a tobacco pipe smoking enthusiast and a little bit of a gamer and a nerd, and he's just an all-around cool guy.
Yep.
So, you know, when I used to smoke cigarettes, I never called myself a cigarette smoking enthusiast.
Well, that's because
I get it. Like, pipes are something way different than cigarettes.
They're a bit of a rarity these days.
They're different. You don't inhale, so it's a little bit more of a hobby than just, like, you know, doing it for some sort of fix. Although, you know.
Hey, also so I can look cool. Come on.
Also, yeah, duh.
Smoking. You know, there's something I want to say, and I don't know if this is a young person, old person thing, but back in my day, they were always like, cigarette smoking does not make you look cool, when I was a teenager.
Really?
And yet, clearly, smoking cigarettes when you're a teenager makes you look cool. I'm sorry, but it does.
It's true.
It does.
Yeah, there's something.
I don't know if it still does. Maybe nowadays it doesn't. You know what? Vaping?
Yeah.
Not make you look cool.
No.
Nope. Not cool.
Nope. Unless, I mean, you can have, like, the big cloud ones that, like, are designed to make a big effect. But still, it's the apparatus that is kind of nerdy. Plus, I think I heard that they're...
It's the affectation.
They're super bad for you nowadays. Or, I mean, like, they're finding new research that there's, like, oil residual...
Oh, really?
...left in it.
God only knows what that stuff does
to
you.
When I first saw it, I was like, that... doesn't seem as natural and healthy, but, you know.
I don't know. I like the idea of it because it's e-cigarettes, electronic. It's like cyberpunk kind of stuff, but, like,
right.
It just looks so dumb, though.
I saw. Yeah,
it's a good idea.
Some people on set were comparing different e-cigarettes once, and I was like, this. I feel like I'm in Star Wars because you're, like, comparing different lightsabers right now.
Like, that never happens in Star Wars. It's like, yeah, I got the Model 300, and you got the TX-190, and, like, you know.
They didn't put those scenes in, but they would have been awesome.
No,
Jedi's
are too classy to, like, actually, like, talk about their lightsabers, I think.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Like, no one compares lightsabers, except for, like, the Sith. I mean, like, Count Dooku had, like, the cool curved hilt, and, like, Darth Maul had, like, the double-edged one. But all the Jedi's just have the traditional, you know, single blade lightsaber. And so I think that you know, the Sith were probably, like, hanging out in, like, the Sith bar, if that's a place that exists, and they're just like, yeah, this one's pretty cool. Got enough a dead Jedi I killed a couple months ago. Yeah, it was a really, really tough fight, and yeah, it was pretty good. But,
is that where they come from, though? I mean, like, the Jedi's build their own?
Jedi build their own. I think that the Sith build their own, too, but, like, I'm sure they, like, pick them off other Jedi that they kill, or other Sith that they kill as, like, trophies or whatever.
Right.
You know? I mean, General Grievous did that. He was cool, kinda. He wasn't a good character in the movie, but, you know, in the Clone Wars, the animated series, he's cool.
Right. I thought he's pretty all right.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyhow, Chad.
Yeah.
Yes. Chad, let me, I'm going to, before we get started, because this will get ruined if any time passes, I swear.
Okay.
Yeah.
But answer me this question, both of you guys.
You got it.
When did Nancy Reagan die?
I don't know.
This is a trick question. She's still alive.
Okay, you're the only person who got the right answer.
Yes!
I've brought this up to, like, three people. She's not, she died this morning.
Oh,
but
okay.
I've talked to, like, three people, and I'm including myself in this, that she died in the late 90s. I know she died in the late 90s.
What?
I'm sure of it.
Whoa.
It's one of those things where the universe has split somehow.
So, like, you remember, you have memories of her?
I have memories of it.
Mm.
Wow, that's crazy.
I'm sure of it. I mean, I was sure of it until now. Now I'm like, obviously,
now there's a rift.
But...
So she's died twice now.
Well, she died in some other universe back in the late 90s or the early 2000s.
But it must have passed over to our universe.
Well, yeah, it's an alternative universe where everything's exactly the same except for Nancy Reagan is lived until this morning.
I mean, that's enough of a difference. So yeah,
it's a glitch in the Matrix.
Yeah, something like that.
What happened?
I'm willing to accept that.
I mean, yeah.
Oh, man. That's crazy.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm sorry that I'm so scatterbrained today, and we're having a very free-form show, and we're a guest, and it's very impolite of me, and I'm sorry.
No, yeah, that's
okay.
Cool.
Like, I mean, like, we just wing it every episode, Steve. That's the thing.
Yeah, I know.
It's all about.
For good or ill, this
yeah.
is how we do.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
So, Chad, tell me about collecting pipes.
I've been smoking for about 7 years, I think, with pipes, and I just started, I got off a feature film that I was working on in Detroit and was away from home for a while and came back and was walking to dinner with my wife and just felt like I needed to buy a pipe for some reason. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. And there's like a pipe store that was right next to our house and on the way to dinner. So I was like, hey, this is going to be closed when we are out of dinner. Let's stop in here real quick. And I bought one. I looked around at all the ones in the shop and was like, I just need something simple, you know, and it's kind of like, I learned this later, but you're kind of like trying to find something that speaks to you. I got like a really simple one. My thought was, you know, worst case scenario, I'll smoke it around a campfire every now and then, because I used to like smoke cigars once in a while like that. Mm-hmm. And then tried it out, and it was just kind of like instantly kind of felt like something that was relaxing. Like the first time I lit it up, it was like, whoa, it's weird. I don't know. There's something beyond just like the chemical effect I felt like. But it was cool. And so like after that, I just got lost into kind of what kind of different tobaccos there were, what kind of different pipes there were, how that would all, you know, combine and make different flavors and stuff like that, and just like the history of it. So I started looking around for different pipes on eBay and whatnot, and I have, I don't know, only like 15, 20 now.
Do you go for more classic style pipes, or like, you know, I was at this Ren Faire and they had this whole booth where there was all these like all the pipes from Lord of the Rings,
right?
You know, like a big Gandalf pipe. Are you more into that kind of thing or more traditional pipes?
All sorts of different ones. Are you doing video on this, or is this audio only?
This is audio only. But like you could bring it on and like describe it like it's an NPR show. Like this one is a
look. Okay, so this one.
Chad is holding a pipe now. Has a very long stalk with a bowl that has a natural sort of cut to it. It's a little bit rough on the
today
top
on this American
there.
Knife pipes. People smoke this.
People who
so Chad, I want to ask
put
you
that like, in your pipe and smoke it. I'm Irish.
No, I go for like
that's what your movie should be. Your documentary should be called "Put That in Your Pipe." Then your pipe and smoke it. Chad, you're making a documentary about pipes. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Sure, yeah.
Or do you want to keep it under wraps?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know, like, if your listeners are aware or whatever, but my trade is, like, cinematography, so I work in film in the camera and lighting department. I've been doing that for 8 years or so. Like professionally, and then before that kind of as an enthusiast, but I don't know, I was always into art as a youngster. In fact, I was like growing up through grade school, I was like the known as like the art kid, you know, like as opposed separate from like Dan in my fourth grade class, who was actually better at drawing than me, and it drove me crazy.
Dan,
what the hell. But he left, so then it was still just me, and it was a small town.
Nice. Were you like, yeah, now I'm the art kid.
All right, guys, look here.
Take that, Dan.
But yeah, so.
So like,
that, anyway, like just to preface that, like, yeah, okay. Going back to kind of like how I got into that was just through art, like drawing and painting and stuff like that. And then got into live action in college, and then have been working as a cinematographer for the past 8 years or so. And then so the film came about from just being a pipe smoker and a friend of mine. We found out that like he smokes a pipe as well after karaoke one night, and just like standing around after everyone leaves, and it was like, oh man, this is great. You know, it just became like a topic of conversation. Then he had a friend who was whose uncle was a pipe maker in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and so he said, you need to do a short film on that. And then that kind of started it, but then it grew from there, because we filmed like a little bit for it, just kind of as a short film, and came across some interesting kind of themes through it that we showed to people, and they were just super excited about, and they're like, you can't just do a short out of this, you have to expand on it. And then we looked around on Netflix and stuff like that, and it's like, just the whole idea of, you know, pipe smoking in general, like, it's a lost, you know, method of smoking, or like, an art form, if you will, or whatever, but it's like, it was really popular in the 50s, you know, and mm-hmm. earlier than that, and you've got the image of, like, the guys in the fedoras with the pipes and whatnot, and I was always curious, like, why did that go away, you know? So it's kind of like got that nostalgia.
Sorry about the dogs.
Yeah, no worries. It's got that nostalgia aspect to it, yeah, so, I don't know.
Yeah, because it does definitely, like it speaks of a different earlier age when you see somebody smoking a pipe.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why do you think, why did pipe smoking go out of favor after it was popular, say, in the 50s?
Like, I think from what I've heard, it's like kind of the cigarettes were just cheaper and quicker and easier, more accessible. And actually during the like Second World War and First World War, it was like from what I've heard, it was harder, like cigarettes were rationed apparently, and it was harder to get them, so it was more like just like economy. It was cheaper to have a pipe and just buy tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was kind of like maybe the cheapskates that only smoke pipes. I don't know. after that,
because it seems like it seems like now at least it's almost the opposite, because it kind of speaks to like an age where things were less convenient and
yeah,
more time consuming, and you had to have sort of more of a leisure time to do that kind of thing. You know what I mean? Where cigarettes, you can just pick up a pack at the 7-Eleven and smoke them in your car. You know?
Right, yeah.
And I'm not saying that from experience, because I would never do that since I quit smoking.
Yeah, right.
Chad, yeah. Like, you're the one who introduced me into pipe smoking, and I think that, like, because of that sort of time that is spent with, like, packing the bowl and lighting it and, like, sitting down and enjoying, like, the full burn of
yeah.
the pipe, like, it definitely takes longer. And I think what I really appreciate about pipe smoking is sort of, like, the introspective nature of it, and like the conversations that are had with other pipe smokers and friends, because like, you know, if you enjoy a pipe alone, like it is like you enjoy it and you kind of like think thoughts and like your mind
yeah.
kind of wanders and this and that, and I like that about that.
I know.
So was that really what kind of like drew you into pipe smoking? Was that part of your personality? I know you, and you know you're a very very like thoughtful guy. You have a lot of different like thoughts and opinions and homespun wisdom.
Right.
But, I mean, like, is that what really drew you to pipe smoking?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I just noticed kind of quickly, like, it allows you to think about, like, everything and nothing at once. Kind of like riding in a train and looking out the window or something, you know?
Just kind of watches the world pass.
You're like,
by.
Yeah, it's like you're between places.
Yeah, no, I can totally dig that. I totally get what you're saying, because that is, like, the one thing, or one of the things that I miss about smoking cigarettes, is, like, it's just a chance to, like, separate yourself from whatever's happening.
Right.
For just a couple of minutes.
Right. Yeah, and,
And then the social aspect of it, too, it's the kind of the same thing. I mean, like, you know,
right.
if you're somewhere where all the smokers are congregating outside,
yeah,
you have really interesting conversations that you wouldn't have with total strangers.
Exactly. Yeah, it's something
I can
that
see pipe smoking being the same way.
Right. It's there's something about it that instantly kind of binds people together, or it's like, you know, when you share a drink with someone, there's a you're a little looser, you know, there's some more mixing going on than you would with just sitting there and doing nothing or whatever.
Yeah, 'cause you have something in common.
Right, yeah.
Yep. And then pipe smoking is so, like, pipe smoking lends itself to a conversation about your pipes and about the tobacco you choose in a way that other ways of smoking do not, you know?
Yeah.
By comparing your lightsabers.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And there's,
how about corn cob pipes? Learned... How do you fall on corn cobs?
They're great. I got one. It has a...
You have a corn cob pipe? Like, yep. Patton?
Not like that one, but...
Or was it MacArthur?
I think that was MacArthur, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
No, they're great. Like, they can be just as good as other ones. And that's the cool thing about, like, the pipe community, too, is, like, there's a show in Chicago every year, the first weekend of May. So largest pipe show in the world, where just people come from all over the world, literally, and I've been there, and you know, seen... It's a worldwide network of like, this niche market, but people come and like, you might have a banker or someone, a CEO, smoking, like, a $12,000 pipe, and yes, they cost that much sometimes, sitting next...
Yeah, I was going to say, really?
sitting next to someone smoking a corn cob, and they're, like, completely equals, and, or, you know...
What do you get out of a $12,000 pipe that you don't get out of a corn cob? Anything?
I don't know. Like, the...
I don't know, the same thing that you get from wearing a Rolex versus a digital watch. You still tell the time, but, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But it's, yeah, I get it.
Like, yeah.
I mean, if you
hit upon...
Like, high-end audio guys, right? Like, they don't really get a whole lot out of their audio as much as they think they do, or at least that's my theory.
Sure.
But at least they can think they do. So in what ways would a high-end pipe guy be my pipe is clearly superior for X reason?
Absolutely. There's a margin of diminishing returns, I would say. You know, as you get over a certain price range, I'm guessing. I haven't really actually tried too many $12,000 pipes, but
okay.
I know they can't be that good. You know, it's more about like the artists that made them, and they like if you get a corn cob pipe that smokes really well for you, that's one of the things about it too. Is it's so personal that it's like you might enjoy that one more than another one. So.
Yeah, I get it. Okay, I can see. As soon as you said, you know, like the artist who made it, I was like, oh yeah, of course, a pipe has aesthetic value that is beyond whatever value you get from smoking tobacco out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like they're just cool.
Yeah.
So like you might want to have a $12,000 one because you'd be like, hey, I got this cool pipe.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It doesn't need a utility beyond.
And at that point, it's like collectors that are very, very much, you know, they want a certain artisan that made it and they want like a style in that of that artisan, and you know they're like they're trying to corner a market on a certain variety of high-end high-grade pipes, and there are like I learned this too, that there's like a grading system where I was like, how can they cost that much and then why are there grades? But the wood itself is so it's briar wood, and which is what most of them are made of, but it's such a unique kind of like mysterious wood source. It's a underground, it's like a root of a white heath tree, it's called. It grows only in the Mediterranean basin. But it grows over the period of 50 years or so, and as it's growing, if there's like a grain of sand that it picks up in the root, that'll turn into a defect in the wood later. And so like to find like these pristine pieces of wood that have the grain that's in a certain structure and a certain orientation, and then you carve the pipe to that to make the best use of that grain, that's what it's all about. And that's what's taken me a while to like fully understand and see firsthand, like, oh, okay, that's where like the art of it comes in. And then there's a character in our film, Mimo, who's amazing. He lives in Italy, and he cuts the wood. Other guys dig it up and he buys it from them, and he's a second generation cutter that he learned the job from his dad, and he learned how to read the wood in a sense, and like know how to shape it in a way that's going to be for high end pipe making. So he delivers wood to all the best guys around the world.
I gotta tell you, you're sort of blowing my mind with this whole pipe thing.
I know. Well, wait till you
really
see the film.
Because like it's this subculture, right? That I had no idea existed, and yet now that I'm hearing about it, it makes perfect sense that it should exist.
Yeah.
And I don't know why it wouldn't have occurred to me before that, well, of course there are people who are really into pipes.
Yeah.
There's people that are really into everything.
Exactly.
But like, it just, like, it's blown my mind that, like, you know, like, I'm sure there's like incredibly, you could get way in depth about the kind of wood that's mm-hmm. used and the meaning of the different shapes in the pipe and how they affect the tobacco. Like, it's blowing my mind, I gotta tell mm-hmm. you.
Yeah, no, that's the thing.
It is.
And Chad, you traveled all over the world for your documentary.
Yeah.
You went to Japan, Germany, Italy, France, and a lot of different places in America with like the Native American and the peace pipes and the traditions, and you learned all about these different cultures.
Yeah.
Were the Native Americans the first people to smoke pipes?
That's definitely debatable. There's like a lot of different cultures around the world that smoked for various reasons through different methods. There's apparently a tribe in Africa that like used, they lit fires under the ground, in the ground, and used tubes into the ground to smoke out of it.
That's cool. That's like such a stoner thing. Dude, we dug right in the ground and we made the ground into a bomb.
Totally.
We made the world into a bomb.
The world, yeah.
The
world
is our smoking pipe, man.
But as far as the...
But what were they smoking? They couldn't have been smoking tobacco, right? Because isn't that an American thing? Or am I wrong?
I don't... Yeah, that's... Who knows? Like, tobacco... That's where, like, Western culture got it from, was the Native Americans and... it's North and South America, actually. Mm-hmm. But, like, what they were smoking was actually, like, a mix of different herbs.
Like
red willow and stuff like that. But the tobacco plant that we have today, it was in the mix. And then... We found out, I guess, white guys found out that it, got, you know, gave you more of a buzz. So they just like, enough of that other stuff. Just give us the tobacco leaf.
Give us the good stuff.
So wait, was there like a holistic value to smoking pipes when they did it like with the mix of herbs and tobacco?
What kind of value?
Holistic value, like, you know, that they would use for like curing illnesses or something of that sort.
No, that's the thing. Like I grew up not really believing in a lot of that stuff, but looking into it, it's kind of like there's a lot. I mean, going deep.
Is that the right word? Holistic.
Holistic. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Holistic medicine. Yeah. That's a thing. But
that's a thing.
Okay. They were very knowledgeable about our, you know, universe and the world that they lived in, especially North America. And you know, we kind of came in and obviously thought we knew what we were doing more. But yeah, they had like really good understanding of all the different herbs and the spiritual properties of them too, and like, you know, whether or not you believe in any of that, but like tobacco itself, they thought was had a kind of special conduit to the spiritual world, and so they, yeah, there's definitely like some stories of healing happening, and like they would use it in different ways, as far as a healing thing.
Wow.
So for them, it was never like a pleasure thing. It was a holy medicine thing. Mm. And a way.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, no, it's cool.
Did you smoke peace pipes?
I did. We went to South Dakota and witnessed the Sundance, which I didn't know what that was beforehand, but
that's a film festival, right?
Yeah,
it's
a film festival.
We got a first-hand education, but it's definitely like a very intense thing, and definitely no photography of any kind allowed.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like piercing involved and dancing for several days with fasting and all that. But we were there for one afternoon, and they passed around a pipe, and we smoked. And I was in a an EP, which is like the sweat lodge. That was all. It was really cool just to be there, witness that stuff. And then I was gifted a pipe later on too, a ceremonial pipe. So it's cool.
It's cool.
It's neat.
Pipes are cool. Yeah. I want to get into pipes now. Now I'm like,
I know.
this is the effect of Chad.
True.
Right? Oh wow, this is awesome. Like, I want to get a pipe too. So like, yeah. But Chad, you're making a documentary, a film, because you're
a feature length film about pipes. That's really interesting.
Is it a feature?
It is.
Is it a feature? Or is it okay? Okay.
Cool.
I thought it was just like, Well, I thought it was going to be like a half hour or so.
No!
Like a short. Okay, I didn't know. I've only seen a few rough cuts of it, which I've been very appreciative that you've shown me. So thanks for that. But yeah, you're using your voice of cinematography, because you're a very talented cinematographer. You have really amazing talent for that.
Where do you live, Chad?
Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Wow, is there enough of a production industry in Grand Rapids, Michigan to support? I had no idea. Okay, I always think that you have to live in Los Angeles or you can't be in film.
No, the benefit is like a lot of my friends who've grown up here, or several of them have moved out there, and so I travel out there quite a bit.
Okay,
and then various places around the world. It's kind of like it's an industry where you can live more or less wherever you want, as long as you work a network really well. I do want to spend some time out in LA, but there's enough like commercial work to keep one busy here. But it's as far as like the scale of quality and stuff, I'd like to work on some cooler things. it's all good, you know. It's just a matter of where your creative interest lies, I think.
So, like you said, you got into cinematography like 8 years ago, and right?
That's when I started doing it professionally.
Okay.
Like being paid for it.
But like how big of an influence were like movies on you? Like how prominent were they in your life? Because like, you know, I grew up watching like Star Wars and Disney movies and stuff like that. So like were movies like a big part of like your day to day, your family life? Like
for sure.
How did you like who introduced you to movies? What was like a movie that really like wowed you and like wow, movies are the best?
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
No, I definitely grew up on movies and TV. It's kind of like in my family it was just like the thing to do is like TGI Friday.
like a movie, a family movie night.
Everyone going around, gather around the TV, and I don't know.
What kind of movies do you like? Like, what's your thing?
Margareta.
What's that?
That Margareta
Lazarova. Phil Wharf.
two people will get that reference.
Right. I like everything, you know, as long as it's good and has a good story, you know. That's really what it comes down to, is like the impact and the synthesis of the visuals and the audio and the story all working together. I don't know. My favorite film is The Thin Red Line, which is by Terrence Malick, and he's like...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's a hit or miss director for most people, myself included. But that one just like has a really beautiful combination of spoken poetry and visual poetry, and just like talks a lot about like philosophy of nature and life and everything. But
this is one of those I can't believe you've never seen that movie, but I have never seen that movie.
Oh yeah, you got to.
I know. It's one of those. It's like The Godfather or something, where people are, you haven't seen The Godfather? What are you, insane?
I haven't seen The Godfather.
What?
That is a problem.
You haven't seen The Godfather.
That is a problem.
I don't know. Like, I've seen a lot of movies.
Oh, my God, Scott.
I've seen a lot of movies, but I haven't seen every movie. I know.
That is the movie.
Well, that's not entirely true.
We haven't seen it.
Well, I know, but, like, people, no, like... People will say that for, like, everything.
Here's some attitudinal questions. Ready?
Okay.
Godfather or The Shining? Pick one.
I don't know. Godfather. I'm a huge Kubrick fan, but...
Okay.
I just think Godfather...
Airplane?
Yeah.
Or Caddyshack?
Ooh.
Airplane. I don't even...
Okay.
I saw Caddyshack once a while ago. It didn't do it for me.
Oh, okay. You know what? I think Caddyshack is a generational thing. Because people that are my age really into Caddyshack because they haven't watched it since they were a kid. Because it doesn't hold up.
I watched it when I was a kid. Recently. I didn't get it except for like the little gopher and Bill Murray.
There's a bunch of stuff that's really, really funny in it, but it doesn't hang together the way Airplane does. Like, there's a bunch of... There's stuff that's like Rodney Dangerfield is amazingly funny.
All right, I should get.
But as a full movie, sure. Full movie, it doesn't really work. I don't know why I was asking those attitudinal questions.
No, just keep them going.
Trying to get a handle on who you are, man. Just trying to get way deep into it.
Way deep. That's the only way I know.
Yeah.
Best Kubrick movie.
Oh. Oh.
Oh man.
2001 for sure. I think, but one of my favorites that's really not very well known is what is it? This is early war movie.
The Paths of Glory.
Paths of Glory. Yeah, yeah. Just like
that's a great movie. Oh my god.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Like the ending is like brings me to tears. It's just I don't know. For him especially, it's like more of a hopeful movie.
Yeah, he doesn't really traffic in hopeful movies. I guess, you know, 2001 is a hopeful movie, I would say.
No, it's not.
You don't think so?
Well,
you don't think the ending? I mean, obviously you could debate the ending all day long, but I found the ending to be hopeful. I really did.
And that's the kind of like beauty of Kubrick and the balance that he strikes is like it's very real and like the nature of life and the darkness of the universe and everything. You know that we have to hit one of his quotes is like we have to create our own light in it. So he tends to portray a pretty bleak world, but then there's like these very tiny glimmers of hope that keep you going. And like the, you know, maybe the ending of 2001 is kind of like, you know, new life. There's
yeah, no, I mean, I don't know. I mean, like I maybe it's just my interpretation, but I took it as a very hopeful ending, you know, of, you know, humanity making the next step to the next evolutionary step.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, speaking of Kubrick, can I tell you an awesome thing that just happened to me?
Sure.
That relates to Kubrick.
Yeah.
I was writing this article about the ending of The Shining, because there's two different endings of The Shining, and there's one that played in the movie theaters the first night that The Shining showed in New York City and Los Angeles. But after that, Kubrick cut it out.
Really?
And he never said why, and nobody's ever seen it except for those people. Right. Whoa. That happened to be at those theaters. So I ended up doing an interview with the editor who actually went around to the theaters on the East Coast and physically cut out the piece of film and had a long conversation with Kubrick about why he was changing it. So, like, I got the inside scoop on why Kubrick changed the ending of The Shining, at least according to this guy.
Wow. What did he say?
It'll be on Blumhouse.gut.com next week, my article. I really don't want to give it away because it's oh, kind of cool.
Nice.
I mean, it's really cool and really unexpected the reason that really he had cool. to cut it.
Dude, that's awesome.
But part of it was that like part of the reason that I was doing it is cuz I want to track down that film, like cuz it's got to, like, it doesn't have to, but maybe it still existed. So I was hoping that I could talk to the guy and go, "Did you save like one of the ends of film?" Did you just keep one? And he was like, no. He had to give them back to Warner Brothers. So I called Warner Brothers Archive, and I was like, do you guys have one? And they were like, that's a good question. Let me look around and give you a call back. So, yeah, I haven't heard back from them, but how awesome would it be if I you know, it's like a one in a billion chance, but if it happened, it would just be, like, the greatest thing ever. Like, here's the ending of The Shining that nobody's ever seen.
Yeah.
Here it is.
You would unearth a Hollywood treasure.
Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, the chances that nobody has thought of this in the 30 years since the 30 or 40 years since The Shining has come out,
mm-hmm.
you know, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
And even if I was the first person to bring it up to the Warner Brothers archivist, I'm sure that their response would be like, oh, we do have that film, let's put it out on a special edition DVD.
Yeah,
it's not like they're gonna tell me about it, but
nah.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah,
I know.
It should be on the Blu-ray, but
yeah,
you'd think. Although I'm kind of glad it isn't. How do you feel about like this? Scott and I have talked about this before. I really dislike added scenes, bonus features. I dislike all that stuff. I don't like watching it, and I feel like it takes away from the product. Like, I feel like if a scene's not in a movie, there's a really good reason. Almost always, it's not in the movie, and just seeing it inserted in a movie generally messes up the movie.
Oh, yeah.
To me.
No, like, I nearly ruined forever Terminator 2 by downloading the code to watch the a different cut, like a director's cut. I don't know if you've ever mm-hmm. tried that, but it's terrible.
I haven't seen the director's cut of Terminator 2.
Yeah, never try it.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes director's cuts is a little different, but
yeah,
it's deleted scenes that I don't like.
Right. No, I
always hear that, like, really Scott has like the best director's cuts of his movies.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's true.
Because like Blade Runner is really good, and Alien was really good.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like I guess it comes down to the director.
Although you know, my favorite director's cut is the director's cut of the movie Picnic at Hanging Rock, which is one of my favorite movies of all time, because the director's cut is about 2 minutes shorter than the theatrical release, and what he took out was everything that could potentially explain what happened. It makes it the greatest movie. I can't imagine if there had been more explanation for... If you guys haven't seen Picnic at Hanging Rock, it is remarkable. It is one of the greatest movies. And it's the guy... I forget the guy's name who made it, but he went on to make a whole bunch of really well-known movies, but this is his first one.
Yeah. No, that's crazy. I don't deleted scenes in the movie. I like seeing them separately, you know, like on the Blu-ray or whatever.
Yeah.
Just because I like, you know, being in film and making films and stuff, like, I like seeing kind of their journey through what they decided to keep and what they didn't and and all that. And it, yeah. Maybe sometimes you can, like alter your
I'm
perception.
I'm so sorry
of
about
it
my
bit.
Neighbor's dogs, you guys.
Is your neighbor's dogs?
Yeah, this is my neighbor's dogs. My wife is doing some work in the other room, so there's a sewing machine running. So I moved my whole setup into my bedroom, and for whatever reason, my neighbor's dogs are going crazy, and they never make noise.
Hmm.
But today they are.
We should add them in the description, like Old Geek Young Geek special guest Chad Terpstra featuring dogs.
Featuring.
So I apologize, you guys.
Exact breed as well,
man.
You know, and
yeah. Be sure to
Peter Weir. That's the guy who made the Picnic at Hanging Rock.
Hmm.
He made The Truman Show and Master and Commander. And
I like The Truman Show.
Yeah, The Truman Show was great.
Dead Poets Society he made.
Oh, really? All right, well, yeah. Picnic and Hanging Rock. I'm adding it to my list.
Witness. Yeah, so what's out now? What movies are out like around now that you're into? Like, what's the best movie you've seen recently?
I've been trying... Jeez. Best movie I've seen recently? I don't know. I've been trying to see Revenant. It's a shame that I haven't yet, but it's just life is difficult to get out. But
I haven't seen that movie either. Everybody talks about it, but I haven't seen it.
I know it's like I'm gonna love it, or it's right up my alley. But and I love the process of how it was made and how people went.
Yeah, that guy is incredible, dude. That director, he's the best. He's the best guy working, and I forget his name, and he is really the best.
Right.
Why did he make that Michael Keaton movie? And he made
Spotlight? No, that was
no. What was that movie? With Michael Keaton, and he played the guy who had been a superhero. He was an actor.
Oh, Birdman! Birdman, yeah.
Birdman, yeah. Birdman, he made Birdman, and he also made Gravity.
Yeah,
and then he made The Revenant. Like he's the guy who makes all the good movies,
right?
And I can't remember his name.
He's definitely Inarritu. Yeah.
Oh, that's the guy. Right. Hmm. Alejandro.
Yeah, so, he's amazing. Him and Leo are like some of the more profound artists in cinema today, I think. You know, and Shivo, like Lubezki, the cinematographer. You know.
Oh, I was wrong. He didn't make Gravity. He did make Birdman, but he didn't make Gravity. I was totally wrong about that.
I didn't like Gravity.
What? Shut up! Really?
I thought the imagery was too heavy-handed, especially that scene where like Sandra Bullock gets into the new ship and like she just kind of curls up at the fetal of the decision. Like you see the oxygen hose. Like I get it. It's so.
Best. Come on. No. I love
that was a great shot. That was a great image. It just hung a little too long, I think.
It held on for like 20 seconds longer than it should have.
You think it would have been cut out a little
you're
shorter?
Right. Yeah, no, yeah, it's like, I mean, we get it.
Yeah, I just wanted to shout that out in the theater, but that would have been rude. So, like, Chad, being one who is so engrossed in film and, like, the sort of industry... what's like? Have you witnessed like a evolution? Is film going in a good direction these days? Is something like is it changing? Is it going downhill? Is
right.
it you know?
I mean,
staying the same.
I'll be the first to admit I'm not a huge like cinema history buff. Like I don't. There's a lot of gaps in my complete knowledge of of where we where it started and where it's where it is today. But from what, in my opinion, it's like, you know, I'm just not a fan of all the superhero movies. Sorry if, you know, there's a lot of geeks out there that go for it. I don't know. It just seems like a money-making machine. Whereas, like, one of my favorite periods is kind of like the Artur period in the 70s, you know, where Apocalypse Now came out and Kubrick wasn't necessarily, like, a part of it, but he was around at the same time. And, I don't know. I liked that.
I'm with you, man.
Yeah.
Modern movies. I see every movie because I love film itself, but movies are getting really bad. Like, mainstream movies are getting to be unwatchably terrible. Like, just right. Unwatchably bland. And, like, I hate superhero movies. Can I tell you that?
Yeah.
And it's really weird to feel like you can't say that you don't enjoy superhero movies to other adults. Like, I just feel like I don't like it because I'm not 10. Like, that's what I don't like about it.
Wait a minute. The story is flat and there's no actual character? What?
Oh, my God. The movies. And I have to see all of them because my kid's 8, so I take him to all the movies. So I see, like, every kid's movie and superhero movie and all that stuff. And, dude, they're so bad.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people are into it, and I know, like people are really passionate about it, but I just watch it and go, what are you seeing in Ant-Man that I'm not seeing?
I know. Like,
what are you watching here?
For the most part, I don't watch a lot of them. I saw Iron Man the first, and that was pretty awesome. I mean, like, the character in it, it seemed, you know, the way, what's his name?
Tony Stark, Robert Downey Jr.
Robert Downey Jr. portrayed it was just, like, had a lot of humanity in it. I think that's what lacks in the other films. You know, they're not really talking about, like, what's the human experience? You know, they're talking about, like, some bad guy I don't believe in, or, like, I'm not afraid of, is, like, trying to do bad things, and people, like...
Right, and it's, they're so predictable, they're, like, yeah. Like clockwork. I mean, you can literally set your watch by when the thing... You can tell from the first shot exactly how the movie's going to end and what's going to happen in the middle.
Right.
If you're paying attention, which you have to do if you're not into superhero movies. And you know what? I shouldn't say I'm not into superhero movies because I liked... Like, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man was really good. I haven't seen Iron Man, but... You know, and I guess I kind of like the Batman movies that What's-His-Name made.
The last one was terrible, though.
That everybody thinks are the greatest movies of all time, but I was like, yeah, they're all right.
The Dark Knight Rises.
Like, I like Dark Knight. I mean, Dark Knight Rises was bad.
Horrible.
Yeah.
It was, yeah. Just.
But, I mean, like, yeah, like, the mainstream movies are, yeah, it's definitely like a cash cow. It's a money-making machine, you know, made for profit. But there are still, like, good, you know, sort of underground or indie films. And there
oh, my
are
God,
still,
yeah, there's a lot.
There are still, yeah. like, you know, some major titles that are released that are genuinely good.
And the technology's getting, I mean, like making films is so inexpensive these days and so easy compared to how it used to be that it's kind of an amazing revolution in a sense, but it also shows, it goes to show, like, I don't think there are more good movies coming out than there ever were in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So it shows you that, like, the technology really wasn't what was holding people back. I mean, it'd be like saying, well, you can write and you have paper, so why aren't there more great novels? Because there just aren't all that many great novelists.
Yeah.
You know?
That's why I think, like, the Artur period is kind of special, because they realized, I mean, that, you know, like, I think it had to do with where American history was at the time, and people were ready for something different, but it was also, like, one person really just kind of plumbing the depths of their soul in a way, and, like, and the studio just completely backing it because they know that their name is going to sell it. So, like, they gave them all the resources that they needed to make whatever they wanted and be honest as possible, and they didn't interfere. So, like, I didn't like the most recent Star Wars because there's so many reasons, but, like, it fell short on story and character in a lot of ways, but I feel like it got studioed, you know, like, to death, where it's like, let's make all the characters as acceptable as possible so that in making them, you know, universally appealing, they end up making them, like, appealing to no one in a way, or, like, by keeping it
vaguely appealing,
by keeping it,
you're like, yeah, I see how someone would like it,
right? By keeping it generic, and not really developing character, but working off of, like, these these archetypes or whatever, or like rehashing old material. So I don't know. I think like there were so many good artists in it, and the, you know, the writer, one of the writers was the writer of Empire Strikes Back, which was the best of the three. Like, mm-hmm. I just feel like they, you know, I think the studio got a little bit too much hands-on and like didn't let the artists actually create.
See, I liked it. I liked the new Star Wars. You know, I liked it quite a lot, but in a like not in the way that I like real films. You know what I mean? Like, I hate to say that, but like, like the best movie I've seen in the past couple of years is this Swedish movie called We're the Best, which is this movie that was probably made on $20,000 about these 13-year-old girls that start a punk rock band. And it is the best movie I've seen in years. Like, just the most emotionally affecting, brilliant, like just true film that I've seen. Mm. So, like, I put that in just sort of a different category than I would put the Star Wars movie, which I really enjoyed. Like, I was like, hey, this is a fun popcorn movie, and they didn't mess it up, and it's exciting, and I like the spaceships and all this stuff, but I don't... It's a different... Like, it's a whole... It's a different thing. Like, there should be... I don't know. It's just a different thing.
Oh,
yeah.
That movie premise reminds me of a game that I played called Gone Home. It was awesome.
But, speaking of games, I like games too.
Yeah.
I do too. Oh my god, who's excited for No Man's Sky? Holy shit.
Holy crap.
Right?
Can I go off on a tangent about this game?
Do please. It.
Oh my god. No Man's Sky is just going to be so... I don't know. Like, it seems perfect, because like it's just a game about pure exploration, going from planet to planet to planet to planet. It's like you have your own spaceship. Like, I love science fiction. I love it so much. And, like, you know, I've seen concept art for it. I've seen, like, you know, all these different trailers for it, and it just looks like something that you see. Like, it's so inspired by, like, those dime store paperback novels that you find Goodwill stores that are just, like, forgotten to time, and, like, that's what the studio's, like, all about, and they are so... like about classic sci-fi, and it just has a sort of feel of it, and what I love about it is that, like, it's because, like, everything is randomly generated and progressively generated, everything is, there are infinite possibilities, well, almost, but, like, you know, the galaxy is just so huge. And I remember I was sitting in church today, and, like, we were watching a video, and they were showing, like, a space, like this view of, like, space, and, like, they're zooming in past, like, all the galaxies and all the different systems, stuff like that, and, like, for some reason in my mind I was just like, motherfucking space, alright, and, like, that's what No Man is gonna be, like, the huge grandeur of space.
Wait, they have videos at church now?
Well, I don't know, we're watching a video series that Chad actually worked on.
In church?
Yeah.
Wow, I was Catholic, man. I haven't been to church in a good 20 years, but yeah, but, like, we did not watch TV in church. That was not what church was for.
Oh, but, like, they have good messages in these videos that we're watching.
I'm sure. But, like, I probably would. Maybe I'd still be going to church if they had. But.
Maybe. But, yeah, so, like, I was just really appreciative of, like, the huge grandeur of space and, like, how big it is. And I feel like No Man's Sky will really emphasize, like, the hugeness of space. And I love that, because space is so huge and it's so excellent. We haven't even touched any of it.
Yeah, I know.
I hope it lives up to the ideas behind it, you know, because it reminds me a little of Spore, you know, that sort of blue spy sky before Spore actually came out, and then you got Spore, and we're like, all right,
because that game changed genre. It really did, like, because you started off, like, you know, eating smaller things and then growing bigger, and then eventually, like, you move to land, and then you move to, like, building up a society. And
but that's what I'm saying. Like, there was cool stuff in the game, like, really cool stuff and cool
really
ideas, but there was no
concepts.
Game in it.
But the thing is, like, I feel like Hello Games and No Man's Sky will do different, because they've pushed it back a lot, which is fine. I'm okay when a studio decides to delay something, because I know that they're gonna, you know, work hard on it. I know that they're gonna, like, add something more to it so that they make sure it's a finished game. That's another thing that I really want to talk about, is, like, games aren't finished these days. They always have, like, a day one patch or, like, a patch that comes later, because people are saying, oh, I'm having glitches
terrible,
here, I'm having glitches there. Games are released unfinished. This doesn't happen with any other sort of product. This doesn't happen with movies. This doesn't happen with TV shows. It doesn't happen with the books. It just happens in the video games, and it's acceptable. Why? It's stupid. So No Man's Sky...
that's a good question. I don't know.
No Man's Sky is actually, acceptable. I feel... it's going to be a complete game, and they really care about it. They're such a small studio, that studio is full of heart, and I love I love it when, like, you know, indie studios, like, really put their heart and soul into it, because, like, we've seen it a lot lately with Shovel Knight, That Dragon Cancer, Gone Home, what is it called? Hyperdrive? Oh, crap, what is it called? I wrote it down, like, Hyperlight Drifter, which is, like, this really cool, like, pixel RPG, which has yet to come out, but, like, has been fully funded on Kickstarter, and they're taking their time. They're like, listen, this will be done when it's done. We're still working on it.
Nice.
And I'm like, I love that. So No Man's Sky is going to be one of those games, but on such a huge scale that it's just going to be incomprehensible. I think that we are at the point in technology with video games that we can actually make something this good. Okay, so that's enough of that.
There you go.
No, that's good.
Awesome, man. No Man's Sky. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm always inspired
by it. It's coming out for which systems is it coming out on and when? Does anybody know?
PS4 and PC. The date is June 21st, so shortly after E3.
I'm going to have to figure out how to get my Mac to play PC games, aren't I? Yeah.
You might need a pretty powerful rig to go along with that.
I do. I have a pretty decent Mac. I just cool.
Are you an Xbox guy or?
Yeah, I have Xbox One.
Yeah, same here.
When I play video games, which is not that much these days.
Steve, you're going to E3 this year.
Oh,
is
yeah.
Is it just going to be like an empty building because EA has dropped out? Disney and I even think Ubisoft has dropped out of like having booths at E3.
Yeah, I know. It'll be interesting to see. It's interesting to see how it's changing. I mean, this has happened before, this kind of thing with E3.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know, man. I haven't been in a while. I haven't been in a few years. And it does seem like there's less of a reason to have an E3 than there used to be.
Well, everyone just used to, like, they're having their own, like, teleconference now.
Yeah, like they're doing their own events and you know, there's no real there's just less of a reason to have. I'm not to say there's no reason, but there's less of a reason than there used to be.
But I like E3.
Yeah.
As one should.
Everyone knows that.
Yeah.
They've seen the GIF.
Yeah,
like I don't know, like it's a sensory overload of video games and everyone coming together for video games and like, you know.
I think it's gradually mutating away from that business oriented situation to things like PAX, you know, where it is just everybody coming together to celebrate video games, mm-hmm. not like most people coming together to make a buck. you know what I mean?
Which is what E3 is. So
I mean, sort of. I mean, I don't know most people, but you know, it at its heart, that's what it's for. So I don't want to say. I mean, I like E3 quite a bit, and I don't want to say that I'm okay with people not showing up, with companies not showing up, but mm-hmm. if they take that energy and put it into things that are more oriented toward the fans and less toward the business insiders, then I think that's ultimately a good thing because, I mean, you know,
yeah, that's
the business insiders are you know, important, but they're a jaded lot that are not, you know,
yeah,
often, not all of them, but often they're, you know, once you're in something for the money, mm-hmm. you know.
That's the interesting thing about the Pipe Show in Chicago is that it's like a combination.
What's it called? Like PipeCon?
No, Chicagoland Pipe Show, actually.
Okay.
And
Pipe Dream? I'd have called it Pipe Dream. That's what I would have called it. That's just me.
PipeCon. Yeah, no, that's good. but no, it's kind of like it's a combination of business and celebration of just pipes in general, so it's like
is it like the E3 of pipes?
It is, yeah, but it's like a nonstop party as well, so people are staying up all night, but it's also like
and everybody's smoking pipes.
I mean, and drinking, and you know,
yeah. No, I'm just picturing like the room with all the guys going with all their pipes and
oh, for sure.
This is funny. You don't see people smoking pipes very much. So it's kind of cool.
There's going to be a whole like.
You're blowing my mind, Chad. That's all I'm saying is you're blowing my mind with this pipe business. I gotta be honest.
For sure, there's subcultures everywhere. You just gotta look for them.
I know.
But yeah, no,
that's why we had you on the show to talk about different subcultures that you're really enthusiastic about. So yeah.
Are there like big pipe, like pipe concerns that are like the EA of pipes?
EA? Oh, you mean like a company?
Like Electronic Arts. Yeah, like big pipe, like Paramount of pipes.
There's like the biggest company, like pipe factories, I guess you could say. There's a Savinelli is like one of the biggest and or the biggest in the world, and then
that's the kind of pipe that I have.
I thought your box said Savinelli, but it was not a.
The box says Savinelli, but but it's
I know
not,
it's not. It's fine. Most of them come from Italy or Denmark. Nording is another good company. Yeah, and then there's like smokingpipes.com is actually, if you're in the market for a new pipe, that's a great place to go. Because they are very knowledgeable and they have pipes from all scales of prices. And they're actually, they are the authority in the pipe world as far as online retail goes.
Yeah. But like those handcrafted independent pipes are probably the $12,000 pipes.
What's that? Right. There's like upstart pipe companies that are like, we're an indie pipe company. Man. We're not in the pocket. No. We're not in the pocket of Big Pipe.
That's
Big Pipe Co.
Big Pipe. That's just guys in their garage. That's what that is.
Yeah.
Making their own pipes out of like, we make our pipes out of tin foil, man. No, I guess they're like,
there's all kinds.
Yeah, because there's artificial pipes, right? Like that are not made of natural ingredients, like a resin pipe or an epoxy or a I don't know what you would make a pipe out of.
I don't think you would do that.
You couldn't make a plastic one, I guess, huh?
I wouldn't do that. No. You can make the outside out of anything, but the bowl itself needs to be something that can allow the carbon to adhere to it. Like meerschaum is another popular material. It's white, it's fossilized coral, and it works really well for pipes.
Do you have one of
Do you
those?
Think among...
I do.
Chad, let me ask you a question about pipe smoking that just occurred to me. Do you think among people who smoke crack, there's a there's a community?
They get together.
I want there to be.
I think it would probably be like five people in a parking lot on like Tuesdays at a Walmart.
Comparing their glass
and they
pipes.
Would, two of them would end
meth
up getting
two?
Arrested. And...
Meth too. I'm sure that the meth smokers also have...
Okay. And so with
yes! Ladies and gentlemen, come to MethCon 2016.
At a Walmart near you.
Oh, man.
And with that, I think that we can end today's episode.
You bet. Yes, we can.
Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate your loyalty and
it's been fun.
Your love. So,
yeah.
Once again, I am Scott Pell, the young geek.
And I am Steve Johnson, the old geek.
And I'm our guest,
Chad
Terpstra. If you like this episode, let us know. Send us an email at oldandyounggeek@gmail.com or send us a tweet. I'm Svederik, Svederik, and Steven is Steven A. Johnson on Twitter. That's Steven with a PH, by the way. Thanks for listening.